Well, with each day that passes, a little bit of normal creeps back into Boston. And there was another sign of that today. City officials allowed the first business owners and residents back into stores and homes around the Copley Square, Boylston Street neighborhood, which has been a closed crime scene for the past 8 days. The investigation forced some 400 businesses to shut down. Now they can reopen, but many face bloodstained lobbies, broken windows, rotting food, and damaged goods. The general manager of Whiskey's estimated that the week-long closing cost just that one business more than $250,000. The Boston Globe's Callum Borchers has been reporting on some of the challenges facing these businesses a week after the bombing, and he joins us now. Hey there, Callum.
Hi, Anthony.
Let's start with a case in point. You spoke to Colin Petty, the president of Marathon Sports, which was sort of at ground zero of that first explosion. Tell us about his store.
Well, as you know, Marathon Sports was very close to the site of the first blast. It happened just outside the store and to the right if you were exiting Marathon Sports. And they suffered a little bit of damage to their facade. Colin told me yesterday that the inside is not badly damaged. But as you say, there can be other signs of distress as well. You know, some of the clothing items within the store were used as tourniquets. That became sort of an impromptu first aid center. And so he told me yesterday that some of the business owners had actually asked the city for this early access that we're seeing today, where they're getting to go into their stores. Many of them might be boarding up or covering their windows in some way so that people can't see some of the gruesome stuff that's inside there, give them a chance to clean it up before they actually reopen. And so that's the thing. Even though they've been granted access again, they, in some cases, can't open right away.
Can't open right away. And of course, they're dealing with some losses. And you've reported that many of the businesses affected by the bombings might end up being denied insurance coverage for repairs and lost sales. Why is that?
Well, there's something written into a lot of insurance policies, about 4 in 10, according to the Congressional Research Office, and it's a specific terrorism exclusion. So what it means is that if this were a different circumstance, let's say that there was a gas main explosion on Boylston Street, and it required the street to be shut down by police for a few days, and nobody could get to those businesses could file business interruption claims for their lost profits over those days. But if it's an act of terrorism, they may not be eligible depending on their policies. And of course, you know, if you opt for the terrorism coverage, it's a little bit of an extra expense. If you're a smaller business, a mom and pop, you may have elected to save the money, thinking that the chances were remote. And now it could be a case where that's really coming back to bite you, and perhaps you're not going to be covered.
And Callum, what kinds of businesses actually have terrorism insurance? Or I guess another way to ask the question is, how common are these terrorism exemptions?
Well, you know, like I said, the Congressional Research Office estimated that about 6 in 10 businesses in the United States have some type of coverage for an act of terrorism. And that is up, by the way, since 9/11, which was really the catalyst for this. So as you can imagine, in the wake of 9/11, a lot of insurance companies really sought to exclude acts of terrorism because they were afraid that they would be, you know, liable for huge losses. And so shortly thereafter, we had something called the Terrorism Insurance Act of 2000. And so that was sort of a cost-sharing program between the government and the insurers. And slowly over the last decade or so, the cost of that has gone down as the perceived risk has also gone down. And so you've seen more and more businesses begin to take up that option to be covered for terrorism because it hasn't been quite as expensive. But still, you're talking about roughly 4 in 10 that are uncovered.
Interesting. Now, we've heard, of course, the Marathon bombings referred to as an act of terrorism. But if I have this right, Treasury Secretary Jacob Lew has yet to declare it as such for insurance purposes. Is that right?
Yeah, this is the thing. It's going to be sort of an odd battle. Now, there's you know, very limited recourse for some of these businesses if they're not covered. I'm told that they would not be eligible for FEMA funds. It seems unlikely that they would be eligible for funding from a group like, let's say, the One Fund Boston that the mayor and the governor have established. And so their best bet, odd as it sounds, may actually be to make the case to their insurance companies that this was not an act of terrorism, even though we've all been calling it that, even though the president has called that. And as you said, the Treasury Secretary, as one step, actually has to declare for insurance purposes that it is an act of terrorism. And then I'm told by attorneys who specialize in this field that within certain policies there are specific definitions of what constitutes an act of terrorism. And of course, they could make the case that, you know, this is really no different than something like, say, the Oklahoma City bombing. You know, in the case of Dzhokhar Tsarnaev, he is a U.S. citizen, right? His brother was a permanent resident. You know, you could make the case this was not a foreign attack, although some folks are viewing it that way. And so, you know, it might come down to sort of an argument over semantics, as strange as it seems.
Finally, Callum, of course, Marathon Monday is one of the busiest days of the year for those businesses. They lost, 8 days of business. I'm just wondering, are we getting close to even understanding how big the tally is, the price tag of lost business is down in that part of Boston?
I'd say, I'll give you an example of how far the ripple goes, Anthony. I talked yesterday to Michelle Zosnig. Now, she's the vice president for marketing at iFixYourEye, as in your iPhone or your iPad or whatever it might be. This is a business on Newbury Street. They're based in Florida. They've got, you know, 8 or so outlets, you know, in Florida and a few in Massachusetts. And she told me, believe it or not, that they have actually taken a business at their Florida locations as well because of this bombing, simply because of the coverage and the manhunt on Friday. People were glued to their TV sets. They weren't out shopping, and she said, you know, fixing your iPhone became sort of low on the priority list. That's how far the ripple can extend.
Callum Borchers, business reporter for the Boston Globe, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Anthony.
And you can find a link to Callum's reporting on that ripple effect of the Boston Marathon bombings on our website, radioboston.org. Still to come on the show, from terror and chaos to the next chapter, due process and the federal case against Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.